2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is the reigning NFBC main event champion, Dylan White, out of the fighting city of Toronto, Canada. How's it going up there in the Great White North?
Not bad. I'm much paler than you after you were in the warm climes of Florida. Jeff Tan Ponce.
Yes. You can see the drastic line between my neck and my actual chest when I pull my shirt down.
Please don't do that.
Oh.
Well, welcome back after your foray at first pitch and spring training and doing some drafts, which we may talk about later. Welcome back.
Yeah, I was down there for the labor draft. If you are not familiar, this is the oldest expert fantasy baseball draft in existence. Original members included Peter Gammons, Keith Olbermann, and there's one more big heavy hitter that I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but some well-known names in the sports media industry. It's gotten much more of fantasy-specific contest over the years as we've developed into a world that has fantasy baseball experts. So I was drafting alongside a bunch of great experts. Doug Dennis, who I've sat next to 2 years in a row from Baseball HQ, just a great guy. Veteran of the game, very good fantasy player, and just an entertaining person in general. Derek Carty of the Bat. He was in the league last year with me as well. Was in the league this year, was a little quieter than he usually is in the auction. Wasn't getting super loud. Glenn Colton and Rick Wolf, who in expert leagues have won as many titles as just about anybody out there. They're kind of the gold standard in labor and the expert leagues. They make sure you know it too. Glenn shows up with his 7 rings and he kind of plays with them on the table and, it's a little intimidation, try to get in your head. I appreciate it. Jesse Roach was there drafting for DJ Short, who unfortunately couldn't make it. And Ian Kahn couldn't make it. So I had the pleasure of having Ariel Cohen in the draft. I love Ariel. I actually used ATC projections for the auction calculator. I let him know that afterward. And then the values were really good. So shout out to Ariel. And he's always entertaining in an auction. So that was a lot of fun. Steve Gardner, Howard Bender, who I hadn't actually ever played in the league with before. So that was kind of cool. And a handful of others. I'm not going to name everybody in the league. Sorry, guys. But it was a great time. I had my brain trust of my good friend, Dan Fu, you may know in the fantasy world, or Dan Greenberg in the real world, and Mr. Gray Albright. So they were kind of my team. They actually sat behind me for like the first half of the draft auction. Dan was there for most of the time. I really appreciated his support. We'll get into that later. We got a lot of news and notes because we haven't done a straight ahead fantasy podcast in just about a month now. We've been doing the Fantasy Summit series. We took off a quick week last week when I flew off to Florida and, we were just catching up on other things. We've now updated the Dynasty 700 twice. We've had a couple of stock watches that will be a regular article throughout the season and particularly the off season as things change. Things are always constantly evolving in these rankings and we're trying to stay up to date. So that way you always have fairly accurate rankings. I can't say that we're up to the minute, but accurate rankings that can allow you to sort of navigate trades and pickups, roster moves in all of your different dynasty leagues. But Dylan, good news, bad news here. Ronald Acuna Jr. dealt with a knee injury, which meant Saturday in my big matchup of spring training, Vlad Guerrero Jr. against Ronald Acuna Jr., I only got Vlad. And he hit into double plays and popped out. It was depressing. It was not the explosions that I was hoping for on Saturday. But I'm burying the lead here. Ronald Acuna Jr. had tests and looks as if he's going to be ready for the beginning of the regular season. So not great news, considering a knee injury definitely impacted his production in 2022. We saw what a full healthy, ready to go Ronald Acuña could do in 2023. The way people were talking prior to this injury, it was almost as if rostering Acuña was an unfair benefit. But the baseball gods in the world have a way of balancing the scales. So how much of a dollar value discount in an auction would you put on Acuña personally based on where you might have been 2 weeks ago where you were seeing $50 values in calculators?
Yeah, I don't know about the exact number. I think yesterday I would have maybe even considered not taking him first overall. I might have even thought, you know, like Spencer Strider or Bobby Witt Jr. As a start, just because, you know, everyone was kind of doom and gloom because the Braves like delayed the announcement for the next day. And so everyone thought that could only mean bad news, etc. So yesterday I may have been worried. Today, I think I'm less worried. I find, and this is anecdotal, I don't have anything to back it up, but when a player who runs has a leg injury, they want to show that they are healthy. I saw that with Buxton. So like Buxton, I used to have Buxton on my teams all the time, and he would have like a knee injury, and then he'd come back, and then I would think, well, I guess he's not running because he had that knee thing, and he'll run because he wants to prove that like he's totally fine and everything's unwarranted, all the concerns. So I wonder if Acuña will do that, or maybe he won't. Maybe the Braves will say, please don't run because, you know, we don't want you to aggravate this meniscus tear.
I mean, we've seen this before from guys that can, I mean, Trout didn't put up 70 steals a season, but there was a period in time where Mike Trout was obviously, you know, an efficient base runner, and it was a huge separator and different body type, different type of player. But he did eventually slow down. It seems like age to an extent comes for all of us, but players that run late, like into their 30s, tend to deal with a lot more of these injuries. I'm like thinking like Starling Marte, who's like never really slowed down. He's always been a productive base dealer all, you know, throughout his career. But I always feel like when you draft Marte, there's a solid chance he misses like 40 games, plays, you know, another 30 kind of banged up or whatever. And that might be what the deal is with Acuña. Just because you don't want to take away that aggressive style, right? I mean, that's kind of what made him what he is. The bat is special enough that he doesn't need to run, obviously, to be a real life productive player and productive for fantasy, but to be the Ronald Acuña Jr. that, you know, is a major separator. So I guess my question is, would you take down his stolen base projections at all? I know that they probably already adjusted that, but if you're looking at projections from a few weeks ago, is that a number that you think you would maybe take down even a little bit, or are you confident enough that, you know, he's going to go out there and try to prove that the knee is simpatico?
Let's see. So they have the range. Looks like it ranges from like 48 to 50. Yeah, maybe I knock it down to like 40, just to,
that's conservative. You know, yeah, I like that.
Banking 40 steals and 40 home runs is not that much of it. Yeah, exactly. I don't think he's going to steal 70. I'll put it that way. But yeah, I really hope this isn't the beginning of like a career thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, he nurses it, or he aggravates it. And then so then the next year he doesn't run at all. And then he's just the guy that hits 330 with 40 home runs instead of the guy who also steals 75 bases. And obviously he's, you know, one of the most electrifying players. We don't want to see that at all. But it was definitely hold your breath time for a couple of days. I don't have any Acuña anywhere. So I was just kind of like more out of like watching as a fan rather than like sweating my money investments.
Yeah. I mean, I'm knocking on the piece of wood that I have next to me, but I haven't had anything catastrophic yet. I mean, I've had a couple dynasty teams that had like Senga and stuff like that, but of the injuries we're going to be talking about, I don't roster many of these guys, if any. So next one to bring up, Lucas Giolito is going to need Tommy John surgery. This is, I believe, his second Tommy John surgery. He had one at the draft. That's never great. The Red Sox paid him $18 million this year. I believe it's a player option for $19 million next year. So they're on the hook for $37 million over 2 years for a player who may come back next August. So I guess for those fiscally responsible Red Sox who could not shell out for Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell, it's kind of what you get, you know, it's kind of what you get. It's well, that's tough.
They may still shell out for Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell.
I don't know. They might be like, oh, blessing, we can come in last place again and get our draft pick. And I don't know. But yeah, it's one of those things with Giolito that I wasn't a believer to begin with this year. He was pretty bad last year. It's been a while since he's been good. The fact that he's messed with like his arm action a bunch of times, I don't think I thought it necessarily was a precursor of injury, but it showed me that there was a lack of sort of comfort with him. And I've kind of been out for a while. So he was a do not draft guy for me. I didn't roster him anywhere. I didn't draft him anywhere. Even in an AL only league, I'd throw him out in an auction and let somebody else pay a few dollars for him, so he's not on my team. Yeah. So this kind of puts an end to that one. Cause I would assume he's probably not going to pitch much, if ever, for the Red Sox. So be interesting to see how that all works out. Will he work move off the top 700 for you?
Maybe. Probably. Probably.
Yeah. You're or talking a couple of years, and he wasn't great before the injury.
Yeah. And he's not young either. So it's not great. So
and
yeah.
He's got two punches on the Tommy John surgery punch. the third one you get to cash your retirement check, I guess. So let's move on to another pitching injury here. I think we've kind of covered all we can with the Giolito one. Sonny Gray dealing with injuries. Sonny Gray apparently might start the season on the IL. The tweet that I saw from Katie Wu was sort of ambiguous in terms of what the timeline was. It seems like the team is still kind of figuring that out. What was the injury with Gray, by the way?
Hamstring.
Which is nagging. Not a great one. That's too bad because, you know, we were doing our, this is not fantasy really, we were doing our preseason picks and stuff for, you know, different division winners and such. The NL Central is like wide open right now, as is the AL Central. Just the middle is just wide open. But the NL Central is wide open. And, you know, I don't love what the Cardinals did this offseason, but I do think they have some bats. If some guys rebound a little bit, they get better health out of a few different sort of key pieces in the mix there. They're not going to have a full team at the WBC before the season this year. They're actually all in camp, which was a huge issue. I mean, they had Victor Scott play in major league games last year as a starter this time last year, because so many guys were at WBC. And they went out and they signed a bunch of veteran pitchers, Gray being sort of the cog in all that. So not great for him to start injured. You know, if it ends up being something that he can rest and, you know, recover from, and it's not nagging, he'll be fine. But I had the Cardinals, I think, to win the division. So I don't know how good I feel about that pick now that Sonny Gray could be dealing with soft tissue nagging injury. Those are the ones that are, there's like no finite time frame sometimes, or like a conclusion even, right? Like it could be something that goes away and we're like, hey, Sonny Gray had an injury. Like he threw 180 innings and was really good this year for the Cardinals, right? Missed the first two starts, big deal. Or it could be like Sonny Gray continually misstarts throughout the year and never got right. You know, I mean, that was kind of the, it was different injuries, but like Rodon last year, you know, if I remember correctly, it was kind of ominous in the beginning. And then it's like, so we'll see how that shakes out. How are you reacting at all to the Sonny Gray stuff? I don't know if it changes. It doesn't change his dynasty value. It's too, it should, at least at this point, it seems like it's too much of a short term impact thing.
I don't think so. I don't think it changes much. I'm just guessing it's going to be like 2 or 3 weeks, which in the grand scheme of his career, I don't think it's going to be that much. In redraft, I think it might, you know, affect, I guess it's like Zach Thompson or Matthew Liberatore as the like fifth starter, at least temporarily.
Give me some Tekoa Roby.
He's not, that would be nice. So, I mean, I guess you may, if you're in a, like a DC and, you know, a late round pick or something like that, just for that, I don't expect them to stay in the rotation, but it doesn't really change that much, to be honest, I don't think.
They should go sign Sonny Gray. I mean, Sonny Gray, Blake Snell. They should go sign Blake Snell. By the way, this isn't on the news docket here. We're now sitting here on March 5th. Blake Snell has not signed. He's a two-time Cy Young winner, one of the few guys that has won a Cy Young in the AL and the NL, both with DHs too. He might be the only guy to ever do that. Win a Cy Young when both leagues had a DH. He has to be, right?
Must be.
And he's not that old. He's the reigning NL Cy Young winner. And he's unsigned on March 5th. And the season starts early this year. We're less than a month away. We're like 3 weeks away. What's going to happen with Snell? Do you think he's going to sign? Or do you think this is going to drag out into the season? This is bizarre. I haven't seen this kind of thing since Michael Conforto, but he was hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it is strange. I kind of feel he's going to sign. I think the Giants are going to sign him just because they're.
I hope not. He went for $6 in my NL only. That would kill me.
That's true. I never thought about that. The unsigned players and only leagues. I just think, I mean, they have so many, like their roster has been decimated by injuries. Tristan Beck had an aneurysm in his arm. Keaton Wynn has elbow problems. They just announced Sean Shelley, however you pronounce it, also has elbow problems.
Sean Helly, yeah.
Helly. Alex Cobb is going to start on the IL probably, but we'll be back sooner than later. So like it totally makes a lot of sense for Blake Snell. He was in San Diego, so he doesn't have to move that far.
It's a great park for him too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like Snell's value, I mean, other than landing with like the Dodgers, right? That might be the best place that he could possibly end up just from like a cushy landing environment, right? Like, you know, they're going to have to hit it a little bit harder to hit it out of that park. He's going to get saved a few times. So that's going to help. It's not going to help his command when he's off. The funny thing, though, that, you know, we talked about this the other day. Forget who it was, but it might have been Matt Eddy, actually, and I talking about it yesterday on my way to Sarasota to go see the Orioles. And Matt had mentioned that outside of his two Cy Young winning years, what's Blake Snell's highest innings total in a season? Do you know?
I have no idea. 112.
All right. So you said 112?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more than 112. I'm waiting for it to load up now, but it's like 124, 125. I believe it's under 130. I don't think he's ever thrown 130 innings in a season that he didn't win the Cy Young, which is like, that's kind of scary. I mean, he's 31. Right? Like, yeah, so 129.1, actually, 2017. So 180.2 in 2018, and then 180 last season. So he's never even hit 181 innings in a season. So, I mean, the kind of money he's probably asking for, that might be why he's unsigned, you know, is it's like, we can't project you for the amount of innings that, like, we're paying you for 2 years of your career when, you know, that's not been the norm. So maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I wonder what Scott Boras is thinking. Like, Bellinger signed for much less than was sort of anticipated. Matt Chapman, of course, and now Snell. Like, I don't know if, like, his clients are mad at him.
Boras has lost his touch. He's being bullied now by the owners after trying to. Oh, what a world. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. You mentioned Matt Chapman signed. We talked about the Giants. Do you like this move for Chapman's value? Do you like the move for the Giants?
I think it's good for the Giants. I think the yearly value is something like $18 million a year, which is like qualifying offer money. And I think it's player options for Chapman too. It's a very complicated deal. So it's good for him. It's sort of like a pillow contract for him, but with some insurance if he gets injured or something. I think a lot of the discourse was that, you know, like Logan Webb, who's a ground ball pitcher, is going to love the fact that, you know, Matt Chapman's there at third now.
Sure.
So I think that's good for the Giants. I mean, I really like Matt Chapman. I kind of wish he had re-signed with the Jays. And there was talk too of like there was an extension he was offered midseason. I think it was $120 million for 6 years, and he turned it down. And then now he's signing for like $354 million, which is a bit of a, I don't know. There was some, I don't know anything about it, so maybe I shouldn't be talking about it, but there was that time when Matt Chapman was mad at John Schneider, the manager. He was like caught on camera when, I can't remember, they pitched to, I think, Ohtani, and Ohtani hit a home run, and then Chapman was like yelling at Schneider, like, why are you pitching to him? He's like, they're only good player. So I don't know if there was some stuff behind the scenes of team spirit was at stake or something. I don't know.
Some other stuff. It certainly hurts JD Davis's value, who was pretty solid player. I kind of wonder. I wonder how that all shakes out. I mean, because they do have Marco Luciano at shortstop. What if they played Matt Chapman at shortstop and JD Davis at third?
They did say that was not going to happen. I think Zaidi actually said that there's no way they're moving Chapman to short. It's going to be Luciano or Casey Schmidt. Or even Nick Ahmed, who's doing well in camp. And it's apparently
Nick Ahmed.
JD Davis heard about the trade like online, like he wasn't even informed. And then he kind of had some public comments that were, he was kind of disgruntled, where he's kind of hoping for a trade.
I can kind of understand it from Davis's perspective. Like, he worked really hard last year to improve his defense at third base. He was a positive value as a defender at third last year. He's not Matt Chapman. We know that few players are in the history of baseball at third base, to be frank. But still, a fairly productive hitter. 18 home runs last year, 61 runs, 69 RBIs, 248, 325, 413. So not a huge star, but a guy that was a productive, player for them. I kind of wonder where things shake out. It looks like Lamont Wade Jr. is like entrenched as their everyday first baseman, at least against right-handed pitching. So I don't know where Davis ends up getting at bats. Does he platoon with Lamont Wade Jr. Against left-handers? Is he now like only a lefty, a lefty only platoon bat? That's kind of scary.
I mean, they still have Wilmer Flores too, right? And he plays first base some. So I don't know. I think he's the odd man out. I do think he's going to be traded or something.
Yeah, or there's going to be an injury and then he ends right back up in the starting lineup. These things have a way of working themselves out. Gausman goes for an MRI. You are a resident Blue Jays fan. You want to touch on that one, Dylan?
Yeah, hopefully it's just, being cautious as the Jays ace. He missed, I think he missed a start and he had some shoulder barking. MRI came clean though. I think he's throwing a bullpen soon. Again, in the redraft world, it made some waves that maybe, he's not like a first, second round pick. And some analysts were dropping him further just because shoulders are always bad. And so, the teams often also underplay the severity, but I think it's going to be okay.
It's fine because I picked him to win the AL Cy Young. Everyone else is picking Garrett Cole. We got some Tarek Skubals. I didn't want to go too crazy and throw out a Cole Reagans. some George Kirby's, So I always like to be a little different. And I was looking at the projections, and at that point in time, he was the highest valued AL pitcher. Based on war. So I was like, the projected war is higher than anyone else. I like me some Jays. I like me some Kevin Gausman. I'm going to pick him. And then he goes out and gets a shoulder injury. So thanks, Kevin. It's my fault. I apologize. Sorry, Toronto. Vaughn Grisham, Red Sox go out and get a second baseman. And guess what? Red Sox go out and get somebody. And it's once again, the guy's injured and he's not going to be there on opening day. This is not a great start for Vaughn Grisham. I really felt like he was a guy that needed a full healthy camp to get in rhythm, get reps at second base as well, which is not a natural position to him. I don't know. I don't know if this kind of hurts his value for this season. I wasn't really all that bought in on Grisham in 2024, but I could see him maybe dropping down boards and redraft enough now that it might be a value as like a bench bat that I could take a shot on. If he starts an IL, that I have a free spot to play with. So I don't know. If he like the value, the ADP goes down from where it was a few weeks ago when I was drafting, I'm not altogether against Grisham as a MI utility type.
Yeah, I think it's he's one of those where before the injury, he probably is just an MI utility guy, but some people were taking him as like with the possibility of upside. And then now I think this injury kind of makes it like an easy, don't think of him as a, you know, a starting second baseman, yeah. Think of him as an MI. And I think that's fine value. Someone who hits like 270 with like 12 homers, 12 stolen bases, like that's fine. An MI. So, and I don't expect him to be out long. I think he's just going to miss opening day. I think it's just a groin. So he'll miss a couple weeks. And like I said, he's going to try to prove that he can still run. So he's going to steal in the first game.
That should be interesting. Emmanuel Valdez, though, might get some run early for your deep leaguers looking for maybe some extra plate appearances, some extra at bats. Valdez can hit. So it's really just been the lack of defensive value at second base that's made him kind of a weird option. But I don't know. I mean, early weeks, you know, you pick a guy like that up in your 30-team league, kind of use him on your bench. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, be productive, kind of be a little sneaky. Wouldn't shock me. He's always been kind of a sneaky hitter. So it's a possibility there. I think that's enough on Grisham.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about using Indeed is how it does a lot of that organizational work for me. I can sort through candidates. I can respond to them. I can schedule interviews all through Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's talk some spring training breakouts, and then we'll finish the show after the break, talking a little bit about my labor auction and how I approach that. We've had some good ones. Colton Cowser has been on a tear. I don't know if he hit a home run today, but he had three the last time I checked, and two against left-handers. I felt like there was way too much negativity around this guy coming out of last season and into the offseason. You as my witness, I even stumped for Colton Cowser in our top 20 rookies rankings and was like, guys, we have this guy ranked really high in our top 100. He's young. I understand there's no opportunity in Baltimore right now, we think, but an injury, maybe a Cedric Mullins goes down. That did happen. Maybe there's a trade. They move a couple of players because they have all these, you know, additional assets that they can move for another pitcher to replace Bradish. It's possible that some playing time does open up for Cowser. I don't think his value is changing at all from a dynasty perspective. I think the helium is changing, which is not necessarily the same as value. That is just perceived value at a very small period in time. But for redraft, I think he's a little bit more interesting. Deeper redraft league at DC, right? Probably the right format to ask this question, because anything with a smaller bench, you're not going to target a guy like Cowser that you're not sure about. Where would you do, like, would he be a target for you in like a DC? Do you think there is opportunity there considering what the value is and his ADP is really not caught up to what I think the skills might be?
I think so. Mullins had like a hamstring thing. thing. He left a game early, and then Couser hit his third home run, and then I happen to be in a DC right now, and he went basically immediately, Couser did, in the 34th. So I think people are banking on maybe he makes a team, maybe he's in a platoon with Austin Hayes. I would have taken him there.
He's a better all-around player, I think, than Hayes, too. So it's just a matter of, like, the skill level, just overcoming that hump, getting over that Hayes hump. So it's Hayes hump.
The famous Hayes hump.
Haystack.
I think in the 34th, like when you're in the reserve rounds, when you're like, you want maybe a guy who can break out, have some upside, like that's perfect. I would not risk now to have him be one of my five starting outfielders, of course. No. And I wouldn't even count necessarily that he'll be particularly great. But, your roster's barren and you need that outfielder who's going to get, you know, play two out of every four games or something like that, then he's perfectly fine. And that's just the floor. So I like him there.
So there were some whispers early in camp, I guess, like the first four games, Wyatt Langford didn't hit 1,000 home runs. And people were like, what's going on? Not to worry, he hit 3 home runs in 2 games this weekend. I put a very aggressive percentage on the chances of Langford breaking camp with the Rangers at 99% the first day that he was hitting homers. I very much think that this guy is going to break camp with the Rangers. It's going to be part of their everyday lineup, probably their DH. And he's going outside the top 100 picks in NFBC leagues. I know I have a friend that took him outside of the top 100 today in a DC. He's pretty consistently going in outside of that range. Do you think that we haven't been aggressive on some of these rookies this year in comparison to how we were last year with Jordan Walker? Because for me, Langford, I trust a heck of a lot more to come up and immediately hit and do significant damage, more so than Walker. And Walker was good. Walker had a good rookie season. That's not to say his upside isn't tremendous, but I mean, Langford, we looked at the data, man. We were saying this last year. He looked like a big leaguer in the minors.
That's a good question. I don't know what the sentiment is. I don't know. I think maybe last year, this is all just me, my opinion. I think last year we did not know that we'd have all these rookies come up. We wouldn't have all those pitchers come up. We wouldn't have all those hitters come up. And so like when it was like, oh, Jordan Walker or Anthony Volpe is going to make the team, like he kind of pounced on it because this might be the guy who comes up. This might be the only shot. And then now that we were spoiled last year with those two and Ellie De La Cruz and Zach Gallof and all these guys, Matt McClain, who did very, very well. I think we kind of take it for granted. And there's just so many now, in quotes, that, you know, we're not wowed by Wyatt Langford. Just because, he's good. He's going to be great. We just expect he's going to be good. So the question is just if he's going to get the playing time. That's completely just my opinion.
Yeah.
Would you take him over Evan Carter in a redraft this year? Not Dynasty, in a redraft.
You know, I'm going to say no, but I feel like I'm very influenced by ADP on that one. Get Langford lower. I'll put it this way. If I had 2 picks in a round, if Carter went, I'd take Langford in the same round.
That's exactly what happened in the DC that I'm in. Evan Carter went in the 11th, and then Wyatt Langford went like 6 picks later.
But like, I think both of those guys could definitely outproduce that ADP, like just in terms of value. And I think Holiday right now is a sleeper. Holiday, even if I think he's going to break camp, but even if Holiday is not breaking camp and comes up 2-3 weeks later, like he's going to get on base so much. He's going to hit for a high average. He's going to run a ton. Maybe it's not 20 home runs in his first season. I think the numbers are going to be there. And in that lineup, he finds his way into the top of the order, which wouldn't shock me. He's kind of like the ready-made, perfect prototype for a leadoff hitter for a lineup like that. He's a guy that could score 120 runs. I mean, like, the counting stats could be immense. I'm still banking on him breaking camp as well. I don't know if that's silly or not, He didn't play yesterday, so I did not get an opportunity to see him in the flesh, but I will again later this month. So, I mean, like, roster resource has him penciled in as the starting second baseman, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, unless they're that caught up on playing Jorge Mateo in the infield or Ramon Urias or the legend Nick Maton that was at third base yesterday.
I think there's a reasonable shot that Holiday makes it. Would you take Holiday over Langford or Evan Carter?
No. Not right now, but I could see doing it. You know, I think the ADP question, like, that's the tough part. Would I be shocked if Holiday outproduces both of those guys in terms of fantasy value this year? No, I don't think that would be a shock. I think these guys are all really close, and I think they all should be within the top 100 picks, frankly, because I think the upside with some of these guys is just as good, if not better, than some of the guys that are going within the top 100 picks in terms of ADP. So another one I want to shout out. Let's move on here. Guy that I took for a cheap value in the dollar days section of my labor NL only, James Wood. James Wood looks damn good, man. And the swing looks as good as it's ever looked. He looks way more on balance. The barrel, looks like he's had good, you know, he's had good control in the games that I've watched in terms of what he's swinging at, getting and making contact. I don't know what your impressions have been of Wood. I don't know if he breaks camp, man. But why the hell not? If you're the Nationals, like, why the hell not? I guess you're just, you know, game service time and whatnot. But he had a bunch of time in the upper minors last year. He's 21. Get a young star up into that ballpark. Get some people to go to the park. Otherwise, they have no reason to go. They're not going to see Lane Thomas.
Maybe. Yeah, I think it's I don't think he's going to make the team either, but I think he's definitely going to be up this year.
I mean, he's 9-for-19 right now with 3 home runs, 6 walks to 4 strikeouts. He's hit 470. I mean, it's 19 at bats, so like slash line numbers are silly, but 474, 600, 947. I mean, he's been absurd.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Roster Resource has Lane Thomas, Victor Robles in center, and Jesse Winker right now with Stone Garrett in a
platoon. That's the one. See, that's the one that gets me, is like, they're going to roll into spring training, like, out of spring training with Jesse Winker as an everyday outfielder when they have James Wood and Dylan Cruz down in the minors. You know, I mean, what are they even paying? What are they even paying Winker this year? Didn't he sign a minor league deal?
I don't know offhand, but I think that might be true.
I'm looking it up right now, but I'm pretty sure that he signed a minor league contract. So I'll tell you right now.
I agree. I think you should put James Wood up. Bring James Wood up. I think it's, you know, kind of throw the fan base a bone here. They can see the beginning of the future, and then Dylan Cruz come up later in the year, and then, you know, they'll sell so many season tickets for 2025. I think I'm a bit nervous about him. I just know that, you know, there's some swing and miss. He is so young. I could easily see him being overmatched in his first, his first foray in the majors. I wouldn't expect that to shake his confidence too much, but you want to put him in a position to succeed, have him dominate AAA and bring him up, you know, in June, July. I think that's probably what they're going to be doing. They're going to slow play it. Maybe not even that late, probably earlier, but
I don't like how you're talking, Dylan. I don't like your talk.
Of course, I want to see him in the majors. Well, that's when you do your big push in the second half of your labor. When James Wood's up, and
it's okay. I have JD Davis on my bench to cover for him, so you know I'll get all those right on left at bats. So I'll be perfectly fine. I think that was interesting. And then Henry Davis has also been on a bit of a tear. I know he made some adjustments. I guess he went to driveline this year. We only hear about it when they're hitting. not when they're not hitting. What are your thoughts on Davis? I'm not super in, but I could see that there is value there.
I like him. I like him a lot. I like, you know, when they were talking about him earning catcher eligibility, obviously that's great. And then they signed Yasmani Grandal, and then they announced that they were going to have Grandal be the number one catcher and Henry Davis would be the second catcher. So then I kind of got worried. And, you know, in redraft, in these big high stakes events, you know, you're trying to avoid as much risk as possible. So anytime a red flag pops up, or anytime an orange flag pops up, it becomes a red flag. So I kind of was worried about taking Henry Davis. I don't want to rely on him to be my catcher. I don't even know if he's going to be a catcher, etc. But now he's just crushing it. He just looks so good. Yeah. I've seen like the exit velocities are so good. And then I think the Pirates are all just renewing their talking about their renewed confidence in him being the catcher. So yeah, I like him. Obviously he's going to make the team. Obviously he's going to get catcher eligibility very soon. And obviously he's going to be productive for catcher because he's going to be playing a lot of, I think, DH and outfield even. So I think he's going to get, you know, more plate appearances than your standard. Well, definitely more than your standard backup catcher on a team. So I think, you know, 20 to 25 home runs, solid batting average, and maybe even chip in, you know, 10 stolen bases. And, you know, that'll play as a catcher.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Yeah. No, I like that. Last bit of news here. And then I think we're going to wrap this sucker up. We went really long in the news stuff. So I'll just write about my labor strategy. And you'll have to read it. Paul Skene's not breaking camp. I don't think this is a huge shock. But it also means that I'm all but guaranteed that Paul Skene's probably pitches in that prospect breakout game against the Orioles. And hopefully Jackson Holliday will be in that game. And I'll get a rematch. A televised rematch where my cameras will also be present, where Jackson Holliday will be facing off against Paul Skene. I don't think this is a shock. I still think he could be up this year. I just didn't think it was going to be right away. It would be interesting if he goes back to AA or if he goes AAA.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think probably AAA, I would guess. So him and Jared Jones, neither of them are on the 40-man. Who do you think gets called up first? Or do you think Jared Jones makes the team? And then my second question, a two-parter, Jeff, is there were some questions about how the Pirates, they shut him down kind of quickly and kind of like abruptly last year, Skene's. And then now that we see him throwing 102 in spring training, all that's out the window? We have no concerns about Paul Skene's now. Is that true? Oh, that's how I feel.
I have concerns about Paul Skene's. That first game, he like pitched to contact. You know, I don't know. I mean, like, what was his second outing? Did he strike out three?
Something like that. He gave up a home run to Ahmed Rosario too. That was
he also gave up a home run to Ahmed Rosario.
Yeah,
he did that too. Yeah, I got concerns still. I still think it's a hittable fastball. I think that, like, personally, I think this guy was way overhyped in the draft process. We were calling this guy the next Strasburg. Like, come on. As someone who lived through that, like, that, this is not Strasburg. And at the time, I thought it was irresponsible, but everyone kept telling me I was wrong. So we'll see. Maybe they'll be right. I am not as into this player as other people. I think that he is good. I think that he is a mid-rotation or better starter. I think he probably has a chance to be a number two. I don't know if he's a chance to be an ace. I may be proven completely wrong here. Is he throwing a curveball now, too, and not a slider?
That's your department.
I have to look. Well, I didn't get to watch. I didn't get to watch, you know, him at all. So I'll see him in person, and I'll come back with a different opinion. I mean, he throws super hard, dude. He competes. He's got commands. I'm not writing the guy's career off. He may be awesome. He just get there's something about him that gives me a bad vibe.
Is it the mustache?
Yeah, I think it's that. It's you know, the fastball. I know you can. I feel like everything. Like we pick something apart, and then we have a counterbalance argument to whatever it is. You know, it's like the fastball shape is bad, but he throws 102 with command. It's a like, all right, fine. And then it's like, well, the slider maybe isn't what it was. Well, maybe that's okay. It's, I mean, I have to see it. I have to see it for 4, 5, 6 innings, week after week after week. Like, I have to see what that is in the majors.
Right.
We haven't seen that yet. We saw it at LSU. There's a lot of guys who are really good in college that have to adjust when they get the pro ball, you know? So I don't know.
2024 then. So do you have Jared Jones ahead of Paul Skeens for redraft this year?
Yeah, I think Jones will be up. I think Jones will be up first between the two of them. And, you know, it wouldn't be absurd to see both of them. The sad thing is it's probably Quinn Priester who comes up first. Followed by, like, you know, Kyle Nicholas or something. But, yeah, I think, you know, Skeens and Jones are both probably up this year. With Skeens, they're going to have to blow off a couple of years. With Jones, he's Rule 5 eligible at the end of this year. So they're not really doing anything there. I like Jones's skills a lot. It's a really good fastball shape. It's an interesting slider. I don't think he's probably going to have the career that Paul Skeens is going to have. Like, I'm not anti-Paul Skeens. I just don't know if Paul Skeens is as good as many people think that Paul Skeens is. Like, I heard a fantasy show yesterday I was listening to as I was driving around, and they had him as the number 4 overall prospect in fantasy. And, like, I just felt like that was way too high. But I could be wrong. I mean, I guess you're in a points league, something like that. He certainly is a little bit more attractive, but yeah, I don't know. Did he pitch today or yesterday, by the way?
Yesterday.
Ah, see, I was in the park and I missed it. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm being a negative Nancy about Paul Skeens, but you know, I think he's really good, and I think he's really exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing how everything plays out. But, you know, would like to see him come into an outing and just miss bats and not give up any contact, any hard contact with that. So I'm
just
sure
tempering expectations. That's all you're doing. Just tempering expectations.
Yeah, I'm sure it will all be nothing and it'll be great. And, you know, all the draft guys being like, you were nervous about him and you shouldn't have been. And I'll eat some crow. It'll taste great. You know what? That's it. 45 minutes on news and notes. We had a lot of news. This was a busy week. This was like the deluge of information they were probably holding for 2 weeks, and then they finally released it out in the ether. So, Dylan, thanks for joining me. For all you out there, thanks for tuning in. As always, we'll have plenty more fantasy content coming up on Baseball America. Don't forget to check in on all the rankings that are updated consistently throughout each month. For Jeff, for Dylan, it's been the Baseball America Fantasy Pod.